598. Today, after reading in the LA Times where a psychic says there is another life form on Earth smarter than we are, but that it lives in the water and has no hands, I decided to describe, without attempting to name, the entity which telepathically approached me in 374. Its most salient quality, when I went to enumerate all of them, seemed to be not its thinking, mentation, but its knowing. It knew everything. And I reported to myself how it seemed to know things and events, and people from inside, out from outside, external facts, but seemed to sweep them out at the very heart. And then I realized that I had given an excellent description of the Parakletos, which Jesus in John says God will send here as comforter, advocate, etc. Also, it finally came to me that the state of agitation and distress and perturbation I was in 374, when it suddenly approached me with aid, was exactly the state of agitation, distress, and despair and perturbation at the end of my rope, really. I was back in my high school physics class when I took the test that dealt with Archimedes' principle. In both cases, the need was the same. The acute despair and prayer petition on my part, need of an acute sort. The same small, calm inner voice came both times, knowing everything and informing me, rendering assistance of a particular sort. It knew the answers which I needed in order to survive. It knew and it told me, and then it departed. It was God I called on then, back in the mid-40s. I'm sure it was He who answered then, evidently now too. All the trillions of written pages I've seen in sleep, I'm sure they're equivalent to the spoken answers I heard in my head in my high school physics class, where I was awake and so couldn't dream. This is information of the highest kind, from the ultimate source, the Spirit of Truth, as Jesus explained it, who sweeps out and knows even the heart of the Father. Mainly, it gave me absolutely correct information and insight, plus the zeal to put into action Handlungsstreue based on that knowledge. Also, it seems likely that my preview of Fullerton, dream for 8 hours while awake back in 1971 of Mexico, plus the tears dream, both of which had permanent effects on me, came from this source. There had been one source throughout, and I think this is the historic name for it, and historic promise. Here are four examples of absolute for sure intervention. Maybe there have been others I never was aware of. Between example 1, high school, and 374 lies 30 years, a huge gap, most of my life in fact. I ask, what about the horse dream in Canada? Look, again a horse. The tears dream involves a posse of horses. The Vancouver dream, the horse attempting to leap the house, which was the Point Reyes house, where the tears dream took place, attempting and failing, that told me something obscure but overwhelming. I have had a dream like no other dream I ever had, I wrote my mother. The oracle, Heraclitus wrote, does not answer yes or no. He gives a sign. Also, the in-cage under Houston Astrodome dream had flying horses in it. The horse as a sign for death. The adversary, maybe? Fate? Destiny? Thought. Back 20 pages, where Joseph Campbell says, you can view God as being everything or everywhere. Note. Joseph Campbell, 1904 to 1987, was an author and religious scholar who popularized a Jungian interpretation of world mythology in The Hero with a Thousand Faces, 1949, and other books. Endnote. If everywhere, then we have Ubik again, who is everywhere. Must see which I settled on, where or thing. Hope it was where. Ho-on, Greek for I am, a title of God. Oh yes, I heard the voice one other time, and she shall see the sea, which was probably back around 1968 or 9, no later. As I wrote Phil Farmer, I knew it could not be my own thoughts or voice. I see now that beyond doubt, that voice was the physics test voice, and the one from 374 on. Again, it came as a result of agonizing despair on my part, and a need to know something, to understand. It brought relief and help and comfort. I had an infinitely complex insight today, that it is just as easy to think of the future pushing the present into the past as to think of the past generating the present and moving toward the future. Since we don't remember the future the way we do the past, we don't discern these heavy events weighing on the present and forcing the present into annihilation, into the past. What our minds do is link everything in a sort of string, one after another, in the order in which we encounter them. Thus, if we reach into a fishbowl of numbered slips randomly distributed, we will write down as a linear sequence the numbers we draw. In whatever order or non-order we encounter events, experience them, our memory will arrange them on this linear track as if they happened that way. Actually, they didn't happen, were not arranged that way, but only encountered that way. But having lined everything up, we imagine the past in this orderly line, which is readily translated into a causal string because so arranged, it has that look to it. Eventually, in this way, we create in our heads an enormous past, pressing inexorably against the present to create the events of the future. But suppose we imagined everything in the present like a stage set, with actors. However, in the wings wait the set and actors for the next scene. These latter, dimly discerned, will inexorably push everything on the stage off, eventually. It is not the prior act, but the next act, which exerts the force. Conceive of the present as fragile or unstable, and this pressure from the wings becomes inexorable. Logically, this is as plausible as the idea of cause and effect from the past operating as force on the present. Also, if, as Dr. N.K. says, time is energy entering a material system, perhaps it enters from the future, is the future, i.e., time has more charge, more force in the future, drains out into the spatial reality of the present, and at last dissipates down into the drain-off slot, which is the used-up past. This is a disturbing new view, but oddly enough, it coincides with my dream experiences, my precognition of events moving this way from the future. I feel them inexorably approaching, not generated from the present, but somehow already there, but not yet visible. If they are somehow there already, and we encounter them successively, the Minkowski block universe. Events are already there, but we have to encounter them successively. Then this view might be a correct view of time and causality. Note: Polish mathematician Hermann Minkowski, 1864 to 1909, argued that the universe is an absolute four-dimensional structure in which past, present, and future coexist. End note. The reason, again, why we feel the past to be real, but not the future, is simply that we have experienced the past and recall it. Memory bits lie in our brain tissue. But this is not true of the future. However, I have never experienced Bombay, India, and I have San Francisco. But the latter, in reality, is no more real than the former. For myself, I would guess that we have, as the Hopis believe, two realities only, that which is manifest, and that which is in the process of manifesting. The former is the present, the latter is our future, sort of rising up from within, from potent to actual. This can be represented spatially in terms of rings, concentric, of actualization, a la Plotinus. Eureka! I've been reading Rollo May's Love and Will. Note: Rollo May, 1909 to 1994, was an American existential psychologist whose edited anthology Existence included material by Ludwig Binswanger, the source for Dick's notion of the tomb world. End note. He describes Eros, the spirit of life, mediator between men and gods, partaking of the human and the divine. It is the élan vital of Bergson, Dionysus. It is especially Socrates' daimon. This is the voice I hear. This is what possessed me in 374. But an overwhelming, intriguing mystery presents itself. Socrates was Greek. Eros is a Greek myth. Dionysus was a Greek god. If Eros, as R.M. says, is not an actual entity, then how come I heard words in Attic Greek and it, the daimon, thought in Attic Greek? This both confirms and yet adds more mystery, pins it down for sure, and yet, the coincidence, Greek-speaking, is too great. It must indicate something, a vital clue beyond all other clues. Thus, in reading Rollo May's book, I have ruled out, in my own mind, any possibility that my 374 experience was spurious or somehow engineered by human persons or groups. It was what it seemed to be. Rollo May traces it back to Attic Greece, and he himself affirms it as a major source of human viability, unrecognized as it has been for centuries. It is the anti-Thanatos force per se, the source of all life, however named. But what I wonder, having experienced this and come to certify it by ancient and now modern authority, why doesn't it occur more often? How strange that God, through some mediating demiurge, can revivify any given human being at his will. And yet until I read Rollo May's account of Socrates' daimon, I had found not a single other account of exactly what I had had since high school physics class. Not one other anywhere, in any reference book. How could it remain unknown? This implies God uses it sparingly. It is virtually non-existent, or anyhow non-reported. The only thing I can think of offhand is this. Three different sources indicate that this daimon, under another name, ceased to be present in men's lives around 100 AD. Gibbon says that the Christians lost the actual power. The International Community of Christ agrees. The witnesses say so too. Or maybe it's the Megiddo mission people. Note: a small apocalyptic Protestant sect focused on Elijah, founded in the late 18th century in Rochester, New York. End note. Anyhow, since this may well be the Christ consciousness or Holy Spirit thing, then perhaps the human being at this end must do something, and has forgotten how to do it, or even that it can be done, vide the International Community of Christ. God waits for us to do an initiating act, or the Holy Spirit, the power was withdrawn, and the dry period of nearly 2,000 years has taken place, without contact between God and man. If this is so, then perhaps the Spirit has returned, which is what I did feel. Especially, I felt that Elijah had come. Either way, it has been gone for 2,000 years, either because God withdrew the Holy Spirit, or because, for one reason or another, man lost the method and the notion. And then all that came were demons rather than daimons, evil spirits only, not from God. Yet this still seems strange to me. If God, through a demiurge, can do this, why doesn't he do it a lot? Look, if I assume that what happened to me in 374 was due to something I did, which others don't ever do, then, heaven's sake, I stumbled onto something of such vast value. It is what the International Community of Christ had deciphered over 17 years, and maybe they don't know exactly how. This sort of makes me like a Van Vogt character, possessing the most utterly priceless wisdom formula for immortality on the planet, which I find hard to believe. This is megalomania for sure. But if God did it all, then why me and why just me? Why not others, many others? Either way, I am into what is, for me, an insoluble puzzle. We either have an unconvincingly incredible human, me, or we have a God whom we cannot understand. He can help, but doesn't, and yet he helped me. Me of all people in the world. Either theory is absurd. Neither can explain it. But what happened did happen. And R.M. had to go back to 400 B.C. Athens to find an example of the diamond at all, let alone the sanctification and new birth which 374 ushered in for me. There is one more possibility. Perhaps, for instance, the records of the 17th century reformers contain accounts, but these are dismissed, even suppressed, by a totally secular age now, as Ursula dismissed my account. These transfigurations happen but are denied by the world. One can go, then, to Dr. Buck's book, Cosmic Consciousness. As I recall, he was able to find 6 instances for sure in history, the entire world history, of experiences like mine, maybe 20 possibles. That includes the reformers and the Greeks. That still isn't many. However, Dr. Buck does advance one theory which might account for this, one which would be in accord with Jesus' cryptic parables about the mustard seed, the leaven in the bread, etc. Dr. Buck says he thinks this is an evolutionary advance, the next step up. In the past, certain precursors of the new man appeared, e.g. Socrates, Jesus. Dr. Buck thought the frequency would increase soon. This ties in with Bergson's Elan Vital, too, and with Eros as the push of life forward in evolution. This is how God works. This is how God has always worked from the day creation began, progressively, successively, continuously, day after day. Dr. Buck's wise theory would account for the rarity of cosmic consciousness in the past and would untie the knot of the dichotomy expressed above. I am like a Van Vogt character, after all. Like a Slan. The next step up. God works through evolution, not to circumvent it. Note. Such lines announce a continuous meta-theme in Dick's exegesis, what I have elsewhere called the myth-theme of mutation. This is the notion that paranormal powers and mystical experiences are expressions of the emerging buds or limbs of an evolving human supernature. Although this idea was endlessly explored in the pulp fiction of the 1940s and 1950s, found some of its most sophisticated mystical expressions in the human potential movement, and later found a wide popular audience in the counterculture with its mutant hippies and pop cultural X-Men, it is much older than all of these. Indeed, the idea's deepest roots lie in elite academic British culture, and more especially in the London Society for Psychical Research, founded 1882, with figures like the Cambridge classicist Frederick Myers, who saw psychical abilities like telepathy, a word that he coined, as supernormal expressions of our extraterrene evolution. Further back still, Alfred Russel Wallace, the co-founder of evolutionary theory with Darwin, asserted that there was a second spiritual line of evolution organized and directed by a higher power working toward its own ends. In short, the myth theme of mutation goes back a century and a half to the very origins of evolutionary biology itself. J.J.K. End note.